Hi, Dan.
Jason, is that you? Thank God. I've been in this Apple store for 199 hours.
Is it all going dark here. Now? Is it all spinning around?
Everything is jet black.
Everything is jet black.
I don't know what to do.
I'll call for help using your iPhone.
If only. We just finished restoring. I could get out of here.
How is your iPhone? It's good to... We had nice feedback on the last episode as I bugged you at the Apple Store.
Our audience seems to largely be composed of sadists, is what I'm learning.
Yeah, they enjoyed your sort of torment and hunger.
Yeah, well, that's our core demographic.
Did you you were at like a shopping center or something. Did you like go get lunch afterward or did you just go home?
I went home and then I think I ate some lunch at my house. I don't even really remember. Kind of a blur.
All just fuzzy.
It was a long day. But I have a phone, so you know that's something.
That's good. Good for you.
Yeah, thanks.
This is I expect that most of the people who listen to this podcast and who read our site probably have new stuff now. Not all of them, surely, but I think if anybody's audience has a deep affection for new Apple stuff, it's probably ours.
It's probably us. You think maybe that might be the audience?
Spot?
Yeah.
It would seem weird that you would read a lot about Apple stuff and then never buy any Apple stuff. But maybe that's another part of the audience is people who aren't gonna...
Aspirational.
Yeah, they're not going to buy it, but they're just going to read about it and then they don't need to buy it because they've read about it.
One of my favorite authors, Dorothy Sayers, who's a British mystery writer from the early 20th century, she wrote a series in which her protagonist was this Lord Peter. And she always liked to describe all the elegant, you know, the cars he drove and the meals he had, these luxurious things. And of course, she was a writer and did not, you know, make a lot of money. So she used to talk when people asked her, she's like, oh, it was kind of just my way to like vicariously experience these things through my character that I would never have access to in real life. So I guess there might be some of those people.
Yeah. It's a good question. It's a good question. So anything you've discovered, any observations you've got about the iPhone?
You know, the home button has really grown on me. It was weird, you know, it took some getting used to, but I like that and the sort of increased taptic, you know, sort of features throughout the OS. I think they're very pleasant. There's something about it that provides, you know, another dimension to feedback. So I'm a fan of what they've done with that so far. I think that it's improved the experience for me just in terms of using all this stuff day in and day out. But, you know, other than that, I'm not sure. It feels, you know, I was showing this phone to my parents the other night and they're like, oh, well, you know, Could somebody tell that they're different? I'm like, well, I guess the color, right? Like if it weren't in a case, you might be able to tell that if you're super tuned into this sort of thing. But other than that, it's going to look a lot like the old one.
Yeah. Well, for me, the 2-year cycle is the whole story. Is like these are really products designed for people to upgrade them every couple of years, not every year. They're incremental every year. If every release needed to be a huge release, they wouldn't release them every year.
Right. Sure.
I mean, in some ways, the recurring release date is at least partially based on marketing, but it's partially based on the American 2-year contract cycle that used to exist, not so much.
Right,
anymore.
Which doesn't really. Yeah. I mean, and so I guess the big question this year, you know, a lot of people noted, obviously, this is the third year in a row that the case design has been kept largely the same.
Yeah.
And so the question is sort of, I think, on everybody's mind is this the new normal? As per John Gruber's piece earlier this week where he talked about sort of iconic styling, right? You know, a Porsche 911 looks like a Porsche 911, they, you know, pretty much consistently over the years with mostly minor revisions. So is this what the iPhone looks like from sort of here on out with more minor tweaks? Or is the 3-year cycle the new 2-year cycle? Or was this just simply they couldn't quite get it done this time around? And so, you know, we'll be back to the 2-year cycle starting next year again. Do you have any thoughts on that?
What I said was that I thought the jet black iPhone was like the Johnny Ive ideal. And so part of me wants to say that, yeah, every iPhone is going to be a slab with a shiny front and curved edges, and that a radical redesign of the phone next year may be that we lose the, you know, we lose the button entirely, the button space entirely, and the whole front of the screen, or as much of it as possible, is screen and not a bezel at any point, not a forehead, you know, nothing. Part of me also wants to say that now that Johnny has perfected his design, the next one will be totally different.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, he's got to have something to shoot for, right?
Well, yeah, but maybe he's working on a car or something. I think realistically, there's a point at which you can't go much further, because this is still a thing that you need to have a touchscreen for, and you need to hold it to your face occasionally to talk to somebody. And, you know, there's only so much you can do with it, a lot of that. But it's not going to... You know, I think more of the same, but yeah, that seems to me that the rumors about next year's phone, that sounds about right. Like, it might not look, the silhouette might not look dramatically different than this year's phone, but it may be that, yeah, it may be the edges are a little different or something like that, but I think it's going to be the idea that it's all screen. It's going to be the next step into that idealized thing, because right now it's not quite a monolith from 2001, because it's got the little circle at the bottom and the little slit and the camera at the top, right? It's not quite immaculately a black slab, essentially, if you've got the jet black one especially.
And it's no Siri remote.
Yeah, well, closer. But I think, although that one's, you know, aluminum on the back, silvery.
For now.
Yeah. So that's what I keep thinking, is that, you know, that's the simplicity. We always used to joke back at Macworld. We joked about it all the time, about the war on buttons, that, you know, why does Steve Jobs wear a turtleneck? Because he hates buttons. And so eventually they had that fourth generation iPod Shuffle that had no buttons.
And that was the zenith, and also the nadir.
Yeah. The ear pods have no buttons. I mean, it's not just Steve Jobs, though. It's Johnny Ive, too. It's that simplify, right? And I'm sure that if Johnny Ive could have a device that had no buttons, he would do it. An iPhone with no buttons, he would absolutely do it. And no ports.
Yeah,
and we're not there.
No ports.
We're not
no
there
ports
yet.
Is the other one. Yeah.
No ports, no buttons, right? And one day, you know, if everything goes as it's currently going, in 5 years, if there is a MacBook, what would that MacBook be? My guess is it's going to be induction charged, wireless everything, no ports. And probably the keyboard will be a software keyboard on a touchscreen.
And, oh, dear God.
And I know it sounds terrifying, and yet that is the end result. And the fact is, that's a product they could build pretty soon, I think.
Oh,
pretty
sure.
Pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. I think they could completely build that. Although, to me, that sounds more like, you know, why not just be an iPad at that point, really, other than your choice of OSs?
Right. You could argue that we're almost there anyway. And what the answer is, it's just an iPad Pro with induction charging. And you remove the lightning port and you're done. Now there's no ports, no buttons.
Your whole device becomes a slab.
I don't know. I mean, that's when you try to take it to the extreme, and you know, reality and people's needs are what are the friction. They're the break on that kind of extreme of design and progress. And some of it is progress that is not practical, and that gets halted too. It's an interesting kind of push and pull, but it's funny to think about their kind of platonic ideal of a product and realize that in some cases their technology has gotten to the point where they're pretty close. They could get there soon. Now, people might not want to buy that product, but they could get there.
Well, yeah, I mean, and we're already seeing, you know, we've seen pushback too on the removing of the headphone port. I'm just trying to imagine the removing of all the ports, just the massacre of ports. Well, we shall remember the day.
That's a tough moment when you have to say anywhere you want to charge your phone, you have to have a little dongly thing that you attach to somewhere. Like, we're taking, I don't want your dirty plugs on my beautiful phone, so stick them everywhere else in your life. And so instead of, you know, the beautiful phone no longer has any plugs in it, but there are power inductive charging adapters in your car and on your countertop and by your bedside and everywhere else, right? Has the world gotten better just because the phone doesn't have the port anymore? That's the challenge of something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure they'd love to go beyond induction to something, you know, resembling more wireless power transmission, but that is farther off.
That's going to be harder for them to know. No, and it's more likely that they would do something like inductive power.
Sure. That exists
and
now.
And keep lightning around, right? And get people used to the idea of laying it down on a charger or something like that. And then, you know, two or three phones later, the Lightning port just goes away. And they're like, you have chargers already. Just, it's cool. Right? Sure. That's cool.
You know, it's interesting that we talk about removing buttons and sort of, you know, complexity in a way, because I think that we've seen the parallel development track for software as well. And I'm thinking about this in particular with your mentions in the Sierra review earlier this week of the iCloud features and some of the other features that are built into Sierra. I'm thinking also of the Apple Watch Unlock feature, which are these black box features that you kind of turn on. And in theory, everything happens behind the scenes, right? There's no way for you to tweak any of these things. And this, you know, again, I think you could plot that on the same trajectory of the we're trying to make these things simpler and less fiddly so that people can just, you know, turn a thing on and it works. And I think, you know, it's interesting to see how in software, I don't think that works quite as well, or at least the implementations here do not work quite as well.
Yeah. This is, well, this is reality meeting. I mean, product design is about making a product, and it's about what customers will accept and what customers do with it. And it's all in together, and it's interesting to see that collision, and it's something that anybody who's a product designer has to understand, whether it's software or hardware or, you know, whatever, that the world is funny and people are funny and they will accept some things and they will reject other things. And I think Apple's had a pretty good run of having, without doing a lot of focus group research and things like that, of offering things that people want. But it is a challenge when your ideal, you know, of like what the world should be runs up against people who are like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's stupid. And it's like, all right. I guess we will put that FireWire port back on that MacBook.
The only perfect system is one with no users, as the old IT adage goes.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So the only perfect Apple product is one with no customers.
Well, I'm sure Johnny Ive could make a fantastic iPhone that nobody would want to use, and that's that. But like the old Steve Jobs adage. Design is not just how it looks, it's how it works. Yeah. Like, if you designed a product that nobody wants to use, it's not perfectly designed. Because a perfectly designed product, people want to use.
Well, and I think this is the interesting sort of knife edge that Apple is balanced on right now, is that are they designed for the masses, or are they extremists? You know, are they appealing to, you know, really everybody, or are they more sort of avant-garde in what they're trying to do? And I can't quite tell, because I think they try to have it both ways.
So I've got a theory.
Okay.
My theory,
it might be bunnies.
It's a dancing demon. No, something isn't right here. A little Buffy reference there for people who like Buffy. It's my favorite show ever. Anyway, my theory is, look, Apple has a brand. It's recognizable. And what's part of Apple's brand is like premium quality products that people love and all that. Okay. Yeah. I think part of Apple's brand really is pushing forward. And that is part of what they do. And they say, you don't need this anymore. And yes, that means that it cuts both ways. Part of Apple's brand is also, oh, I'm going to have to buy an adapter. Oh, you know, my dock connector is gone. So I'm mad at Apple about that. So I'm going to have to get new stuff. That's part that they go together, though. I feel like that's part of it. Apple is not a brand that promises you eternal compatibility or anything like that.
Or complacency.
They're going to frustrate you. At the same time, they're going to give you that like chill of like, ooh, new things. And I think that a lot of people have internalized that trade-off as part of Apple's brand. So
yeah, that's a good point.
So that's I think, is Apple for like the total traditionalist who doesn't want anything to change? I don't think that's Apple's brand. I think Apple's got people like that who are their customers, but I don't think those are their like core customers. I think, I don't want Apple to come across as like some artsy fartsy company who only wants the people on the cutting edge, because that's not true either. They're a mass market company. But what makes somebody choose an iPhone over an Android phone? I think this is one of the reasons, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, even though it is sort of a weird, contentious relationship. I mean, yeah. I know people who are still mad.
It's a trade-off.
I know people who are still mad that iTunes reorganized their music library like 15 years ago. They're still angry about it.
Sure.
yeah, I think you're right. It is a weird sort of relationship because I think I know a lot of people who are so frustrated, you know, with all of those challenges. And yet, very few of them go out and switch platforms. Sure. So there's something to be said, you know, they're going to carp and they're going to moan about it. And then they're going to, you know, pony up their $20 or whatever to buy the adapter. So I think you're right that that is part of their image and their brand. I do wonder sometimes about them becoming, I don't want to quite say a caricature of themselves, though I think that's a, yeah. I think that's a risk that they run. Uh-huh. But also just taking principled stands that maybe aren't necessarily always to their benefit. So I'm thinking specifically, in fact, I'm working on a piece on this right now for a column this week. Of the photos people feature.
Yes, I know.
And this,
well,
this is an interesting feature, right? Because the idea is, well, okay, we're going to provide a machine learning algorithm that can scan your photo library and identify people and group them by their faces, you know, and we've been doing this kind of thing for a while with different technologies and different, you know, iterations of iPhoto and what have you. But what's weird about it this time is that they made a big deal when they rolled out this feature about all of the analysis and processing of this happens on the device. And that seems great, right, from a privacy standpoint, right? Your photos aren't leaving your device. They're not going up to the cloud. They're not being scanned by a computer or any other sort of intelligence that's looking at your photos. Your photos are private. And I understand all of that. But the problem is that it really kind of hampers the usefulness of this feature because what it means is that each device does its processing separately. So your iPhone, you know, scans these pictures and comes up with its conjectures about who's in what picture. And if you go through and tag a bunch of people or merge some, okay, yep, those are pictures of me and those are also pictures of me. I'll put those together or this is not this person. You know, you go through and you spend all your time doing that and then you go over your Mac. None of that work transfers.
None.
It's just baffling. And I don't understand that. I mean, I do understand this again. I think that they, I worry this is a political thing and that they're putting
I have a theory. Again, I got a theory. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Giles again.
Yeah, okay.
My theory is that that it didn't make the cut. My theory is that it's that simple, that they just decided they didn't want to have to deal with syncing all that metadata because it would be a lot of data to sync. And so instead they just, and at the talk show at WWDC, Greg Joswiak said, we might do that down the road. Like he didn't say no. He just sort of, it very much came across to me as like, they didn't get to it. It was so much that they had to do to get this feature into photos that they just tossed it out. So I don't even think it's like, we're taking a stand on privacy and not syncing your people data. I think it's literally like, yeah, we ran out of time to sync.
But it was what makes it, you know, I think you're right, but at the same time, I think they spun it very much as a political thing, at least for the public-facing crowd, which is we're not going to send these anywhere near the cloud because it's a shot at Google Photos.
Well, right. I think that was more about like the machine learning stuff than like if you assign a name to a face kind of stuff. And besides which, there's also a difference between like how you train versus not. This is you could sync encrypted face data devices
there's no
without Apple
you
ever seeing it, right?
I mean, not only that, but you know, it's funny for them to take a stand here where they already store so much of your personal and private data, right? Like they have your credit card numbers. They, you know, they back up your iMessage conversations are all backed up, even in encrypted backup, right? Like, it's not as though they aren't getting information. They take your Siri queries and process them on a server. Like, it's not as though they couldn't, you know, the key is what they're saying is we are not intending to use that for any sort of nefarious business purposes, right? Like we are, and well, and that I think in there comes in this whole stance.
And we're not analyzing in the cloud. We're analyzing on your device.
Right. I mean, I think in there, that's where this whole play for them of the differential privacy really comes to bear on it is this idea of, look, we're going to do some machine learning and some processing of aggregate information, but we're going to try really hard to make sure that we can't trace that back to an individual person or build a, you know, definitive profile of a person. And I think, you know, sometimes that's, I think there's good to that and there's bad to that too, because there are other places. It's not just this photos feature. I think Siri has this problem too sometimes in that, you make some changes, you know, or give Siri some instructions on one device, and that doesn't necessarily transfer. You pick up your iPhone and you talk to Siri, and then you pick up your iPad or your Mac, and it sometimes feels like talking to just like a totally different person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no, I think this is the next big step in their cloud stuff is I don't want your servers processing my cloud stuff, but I want your servers syncing my cloud stuff. Right. I want it is look, I wrote about this when I wrote about Photos for Mac, and I knew it was coming like 3 months ago, but like everybody gets a new iPhone. They upgrade to iOS 10 on their old iPhone. And what happens? It gets really hot overnight because it's indexing every single picture on your device. It's like a spotlight search on a Mac, a spotlight index where it totally bogs down your Mac. It's like that. It's scanning every photo on your device. If you've got thousands, it's a huge deal. And it's doing it for the machine learning. Okay, fair enough. It's got to do it. Then you upgrade to Sierra on your Mac. Sierra came out this week, right? We haven't even mentioned that yet. You upgrade to Sierra on your Mac. And what happens? Does it sync to iCloud and take advantage of all the work that your device did? Or your iPad, you upgrade your iPad to iOS 10, but you already had your iPhone on iOS 10. What happens? Does it sync the data? No. All those other devices get to sit there and churn and run really hot and work overnight in order to repeat the exact same task that the iPhone already did or whatever.
And yet
that first
they come up with different results
they
sometimes.
Do. They do. It's true.
It's a little maddening.
Uh-huh.
I believe you that they, you know, I sign on to the idea that it didn't make the cut and that they would do it, you know, or that they intend to do it at some point, because otherwise this feature is just, it's just silly. It's just a lot of, like, why am I going to spend my time going through, and especially because some of the machine learning stuff they've done in so many other places is actually pretty impressive. Like, I like the stuff that Photos does when it identifies a person and that you can, like, pull up memories or... you pull up a person and it gives you sort of a video overview. It's very clever and it's very well done. But the whole point of that is I don't have to do it, right? Like, it's not like in the old days when you remember you could build those movie trailers in iMovie, and it's like they gave you all the, you know, the idea. You could like slot in footage, right?
Yeah.
And then they basically took it a step further and says, don't even worry about slotting in footage. We'll just find footage and put it in for you. And you know what? It makes a lot more sense because it's a lot less work and it comes up with something that's probably almost as good as what I would make if I spent hours on it.
Yeah. 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 I don't.
Pretty soon your phone will take all the pictures that it knows you want to take. Like, you don't have to do anything. Your phone will just take all the pictures and assemble it.
It already happens that when you take a picture, your camera is actually taking many pictures and finding the one that it thinks is the best. Not even when you're in burst mode. iPhone picture, it takes multiple pictures and picks the one that it thinks is the best. Or in some cases, like HDR mode is like this, the new portrait mode on the Plus is like this. It's only a matter of time before this happens in and the dual cameras in the Plus as well.
Yeah.
You've already got cases where it's taking multiple pictures and merging them together to form an Uber picture that is the best looking picture, right? So you're already most of the way there where you're pressing the button to say, I would like a picture here, please save this. But it's doing all that work. When you've got live photos turned on, it's video recording all the time.
Right.
So that when you snap the picture,
it has the buffer.
It's got the previous 3 seconds. So, yes, you're right, Dan. I mean, really, we're at the point now where whenever you've got your phone around, it should just be looking out the camera lens, thinking, is there something good here for me to save on the camera roll?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, if there's a future where something like a Google Glass-like product rears its head again, it very much might include something like that, right? Because you could analyze all the audio and the video and everything going around you and saying, hey, you really want to remember this later. I'm just going to composite this for you.
It's a setting in the camera app that is take pictures of interesting things you see. Right.
Jason,
like, okay.
We are all just settings in someone's camera app, perhaps. Let me just chew on that.
I reject you and your camera app theory of
that's
life.
Fine. You're just a pixel like I am.
Oh, we're just pixels in a setting in switch in someone's camera app. That's the new
we're just in a simulation,
Well, I was going to say that's new, like the solar system is like an atom in a blade of grass in another universe. That's a Stephen King reference I just made. Look at that. Look at me.
Well done.
Ah. Yeah, how about that? Anyway, yeah, so macOS Sierra came out this week.
It did. I mean, you and I have been using the betas for quite some time. So, release time, as we've talked about before, release time is always a little bit underwhelming because you're like, well, everybody else gets to see this, but I've been playing with this for months now. And so, it's interesting to look at it and try to figure out which features are going to be the ones that people sort of seize on as the interesting features. Because obviously, Apple made a big deal out of putting Siri in Sierra. I barely touch it. I really don't use it much at all.
I use it occasionally. I've actually used it to pin like a baseball score in the notification center. But now that it's there, I don't need to update it. It updates to the next baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
And I use it occasionally for something where I think, oh, this would be a good thing to ask Siri. And so I'll hit the keyboard shortcut and ask the question. But it's pretty rare. It's pretty rare. Somebody asked me about this, about like why even update? Because my review, my review is middling. My review is like, some of the features that are cool aren't reliable. And some of the features that are kind of really new, I don't like. Why upgrade other than the fact that it's free and inevitable and has all the security updates in it?
That's a really good reason though.
All the reasons. And my answer is Photos. If you use Photos, that is reason enough because you get the machine learning algorithm stuff and it's really good and helps you. And Memories too. Memories, people don't talk enough about Memories.
Cool. Yeah.
That is such a great feature that it floats up stuff. I have found things and it is Memories. It's saying, hey, remember when you took this trip 5 years ago? And it just shows you a little collection of photos. It's so great because when you've got 10,000 photos, when you've got, in my case, I've got like 16 years of digital photos in this library. I don't look at those photos. I don't scroll back through 15 years of photos. And so it just floats things. It's like, hey, not just on this date in history, but like, here's this random thing that I found a while ago. Or the one that really got me is there was one that was called In Nature. And it was literally pictures of my kids in the out of doors. Pictures of my kids in deserts and forests and stuff. And way it does that is because since it's got this index of the machine learning stuff, it can actually be like, what if I had these two faces together in these things that I've called nature, which is, trees and rocks and desert and whatever. And from all of that little sets of metadata, it can build a memory. And so that's pretty great. And then they do related memories where, like, if you're looking at a trip that's got a certain number of people and certain kinds of people in a certain place, it'll be like, oh, would you like to see other collections of those people together, other collections of those people separately, other collections of that place when you've been there another time? I had one where it was like at a ballpark, and one of the other options was, would you like to see this trip that you made to a different ballpark? I'm like, what is happening? So that for me, that is the Photos, I think, is, and not just because I've spent a lot of time in it, I think it's the number one feature in Sierra. So if you don't use Photos, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I find that it's nice on iOS 10 as well. I've found several instances where it assembled memories of specific things. Like, I found a bunch of selfies that like my girlfriend and I took together and composited those into an album. And I think it's really clever. I do wonder sometimes about the potential for false positive. I mean, you always see the things where like Facebook does awkward things like surfacing memories that are unhappy. And I think that's probably bound to happen with this kind of thing too, right? Because there's just no avoiding that. And it's not to say that it's anything that they can really get around, but it is one of those things where you sometimes look back at certain photos like, oh man, I don't really want to remember this.
Yeah, you have to name things like very particularly. You have to be like, I was talking to, who was that? It was Anil Dash and Gina Trapani when they did Think Up. One of the things that they had to do is phrase things a certain way. So it wasn't like, you haven't talked to this friend in a while.
Right.
Because they're like, they died.
Yeah.
And you've got to be careful. And I mean, that memories feature has generated strong emotions in me for sure.
Sure.
Because there's
yeah.
stuff in there that I'm like, oh, wow, I haven't thought about that. And, it is powerful, but I do think it's kind of brilliant too.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I do think, as I said, like even, coupling that with the people thing, like, I pulled up, a picture of my parents or something and it like just assembled like, oh, here's just a bunch of photos that we assembled like as like a little movie of my mom or something like that. And it's like, it's surprisingly well done, yeah. right? Like, and I find that such a fascinating idea. And as you point out, a great idea, because we take all these pictures constantly because we have our phones with us all the time. And I mean, I pull up a photo every once in a while to show somebody, like, oh, I just took this photo because I wanted to show you something. But I take all those photos of events and, you know, oftentimes don't go back and look at them.
Right.
Or I only look at them that one time, you know, I come back from Hawaii or whatever, and I show my parents, like, oh, here's what we did, right? Like, but then it sort of gets lost in the shuffle because it just keeps going. So I agree. I think that memories is probably the best feature of photos in general and on Sierra. So it's worth the upgrade if you use photos. I know yeah. some people don't, but I'm bullish on it.
And the only other thing I'll say about Sierra right now, and I mean, you can read my review on Six Colors about it if you like, and you can listen to me probably talk about it on Upgrade next week too. But I'll just say this: don't turn on iCloud Documents and don't turn on Optimized Storage. Just don't do it. Just don't do it, because there's a story there. I mentioned it in there. Basically, I had files removed from my hard drive while I was working on them, when my hard drive reported not having had plenty of free space, and yet it still removed things. And there, in fact, I think Sierra gets really, they're trying this new concept of purgeable space, which on one level is really brilliant because you want to be able to manage space that is currently taking up space, but that it could wipe out if it's like caches, things that it could wipe out if need be. So like if you've got photos and you've got a photos library and it's all synced in the cloud, but you've downloaded over the course of years of using it, you've downloaded many gigabytes of photos data locally. They're all in the cloud. You don't need to keep them locally, but they're locally because it's convenient. Those are purgeable. Those are essentially that's data that could be gotten rid of at any
time.
And so what it's trying to do is come up with this new concept, which is your actual free space plus this purgeable free space, and putting them together. The problem is that it seems to be getting confused about it and removing things when you shouldn't have to remove them. And it bit me. And plus it seems to do a bad idea of guessing about like what you're using and not using. Mm-hmm. And and so like part of the premise is you sync the documents and desktop folders because that's where the files that you work on are. And that way they're available on any of your devices. But at the same time, if you can't rely on them being there while you're working on them, then why would you use them? So it's this catch 22 of like, it's for your most valuable things, but my advice is if you have valuable things there, don't use it.
Well, I mean, that's the idea with Dropbox, right? Like, is, but it keeps everything local, right? It doesn't try to purge stuff. It doesn't try to think, you know, try to be too smart about it. It just says, put your files in here and your files will be on all your devices. And Apple tries to take it a step further. And this is that black box problem, I think, that we talked about earlier, which is that it is sometimes really hard to predict what the computer is going to do. I mean, you know, my feature that I keep talking about on Sierra is Apple Watch Unlock, because over the several months that I've been using the beta, I find it totally incomprehensible why it sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. No idea. I have plenty of days where it just sort of either spins and thinks about it and then gives up and gives me a password field, which is always hilarious because it takes like 20 seconds to do that. And it's like, could have typed my password by now. Or it just, you know, doesn't even look in the first place. And it's just like, oh, no, I'm not going to bother with that today. And sometimes it works fine. I have no idea. But the answer is, I don't know why. There's only one checkbox that controls that entire feature. And it makes no, like, there's no transparency to it whatsoever. So sometimes Apple is too smart for its own good.
Yeah, we were talking about, hey, my garage door is closing because my son just got home from school. I would normally edit this part out, but it's the secret podcast. You get all the details that you get to hear the dog shaking and you get to hear the garage door closing. The unlock was, we were on Clockwise this week and somebody, Casey List, said that he'd tried it twice and wasn't that it? And it worked once and it didn't work the other time. And we said, wow, 50%, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. That's not my percentage is much lower than that.
Oh yes, so is mine.
And then on the universal clipboard, which is such a great feature when it works, but it doesn't work reliably. For me, I can pretty reliably paste something that I put on my, I can copy something on my iPhone and then paste it on my Mac. And that works fairly reliably, but I can't get any other direction to any other device to work reliably at all. And so it's really disappointing because it's like some of these features I want to say, yeah, that's a great idea for a feature, but I can't see it working enough to, I can't recommend it because it's not reliable enough. It's like, like continuity. It's just not reliable enough.
Yeah, exactly. Universal Clipboard is hilarious too, because there's absolutely no UI whatsoever.
Correct.
Anywhere. And so how do you find that out except by accidentally pasting something and being like, that's weird. I didn't copy this on this device. Like, that to me is kind of, I understand the transparency and the idea that it should be as simple as possible. But it's like, I spent a while when I first set up all the betas, like, how do I get this to work? And then, like, I was like Googling online. I was like, oh,
just do it.
Apparently, it just does it. And I was right, like, but, that's weird.
But how do you let a user know if you're Apple? Like, exactly. Hey, did you know you can do that? And it's like, I don't know, the tips app, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. It's very, very strange. It's a great idea. But like you, I've had sort of mixed results, and I just forget about it a lot. Like, so because it's so transparent, and because I've developed now years of muscle memory between I want to get something between these two devices, it just seems right. It's something I don't end up thinking about. I mean, AirDrop has the same problem. I really like AirDrop when it works, and I've gotten it over the last year or two to work very, very reliably between my iPhone and my MacBook Air. Occasionally it dies, and I just, it's like, well, I just got to wait for it to come back because I literally don't know what to do to fix this. So this is the problem with these black box features. It's great when they just work, but when they just don't work.
Yeah, that's it doesn't
just don't work.
It doesn't just work is what I said in my review.
That works better than it don't just work.
Yeah, it's not that it doesn't work. It's that it doesn't just
work.
It sometimes just works and other times it doesn't. And it's really frustrating.
All of this is much, much worse marketing for Apple.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I don't expect my review to be quoted in the marketing materials, right? Like, I can't recommend this feature, says Jason of Six Colors. Yeah. I can't recommend this.
Well, maybe next year.
Yeah, sure. Maybe next year. All right, well, I think that we're going to wrap it up here, but we're going to do a Six Colors Magazine next week. So there'll be more about that, and we'll be back.
Good.
And all that stuff will be there. And also, by the way, I should say to Six Colors subscribers out there, I'm going to be at the UL conference, which is in early November in Ireland. If you are intrigued by the idea of going to this conference in Ireland, I know it's a long haul for North American people. It's a nice jaunt for people in Europe. Stay tuned to the newsletter because I think we're going to do a special deal where you're going to get a discount on UL if you're a Six Colors subscriber. So look for that. And it would be cool to see some people who are Six Colors subscribers at the UL conference in Ireland. It's awesome. You come into Dublin and then everybody gets on a train together. There's a special UL train that takes you out to Killarney where it is. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Sorry, Dan.
I won't be there.
You don't get to come.
Sad. I'm holding my own conference. Yeah. The same Dan conference.
Conference. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for subscribing and look for the magazine next week and listen to us next week. And that's it. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.